Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, my home, my Tilofalava. Welcome to Caucus. I'm Tim Watkin.
I'm Lisa Owen.
Kia ora, I'm Scott Campbell.
I'm Guy Espinner. That's time running out on the campaign. See sound effects. 2 days, 7 hours and a bunch of minutes until the polls close. You remember the House rose back on the 6th of August. That was 70 long days ago. We've had a false start, an extra lockdown for COVID. We've got one more debate to go, one more big poll tonight. But we're into the final hours. It's a bit after 11 a.m. on Thursday morning, and this is Caucus. We're going to look back over the campaign, do some quick fires, but first, this week on the trail, let's start with wealth tax. It's the most interesting part in many ways is that it's started the negotiation discussions and the coalition stuff. But let's run through this. Judith Collins got the ball rolling on Sunday, which is the day she called Stop the Wealth Tax Day.
Hi everybody, so it's Stop the Tax, Wealth Tax Day today.
Why are you continuing to campaign against the wealth tax when on Friday Jacinda Ardern specifically ruled out even negotiating with the Greens about it?
Actually, because I know that that's what she wants to do. So she is very keen on it. We've seen, heard James Shaw come out again the other day saying that he wanted to do it. And the other thing is that as we saw, when the Greens put a bit of pressure on them, of course they'll give in. Think about the Green school, $11.7 million.
It had the desired effect at first. Labor said no. Green said yes. Here's what the Greens said.
We're going to put it up for discussion alongside our plans to transition farming to a more sustainable future, alongside our plans to clean up our oceans and to protect our marine wildlife, alongside the plans to make sure that everyone's got a home to live on.
Just the argument says that it's not even going to get to the negotiation.
Well, let's have an election and then let's sit around the negotiating table and see what happens.
Chloe Swarbrick said some things. Yeah. Swarbrick said some things about how the Greens were thinking about walking away from Labor over their hardline stance. But then yesterday, the leaders poured some cold water on that, and Ardern doubled down with this comment.
Will you resign as Prime Minister before you implement a wealth tax?
Again, I've made my position and Labor's position absolutely clear. We've ruled it out. This is not up for discussion.
So you resign rather than put in a wealth tax?
It's not in play, so there's no need for the hypothetical. It won't happen.
That's something that has been put in place before over raising the super age. So would you resign before you put in a wealth tax?
I won't allow it to happen as Prime Minister.
And there's the bottom line. And then the Greens reacted to this. Last clip, guys, and we can talk about it. This is how the Greens reacted to Ardern's comments late yesterday.
The Prime Minister today actually went as far as to say that as long as she's Prime Minister, there will be no wealth tax, similar to what she did with the capital gains tax. What's your reaction to that?
Let's have an election and let's have a negotiation.
But that's still pretty strong from her, right, to say that this is never going to be happening under her tenure. Today you endorse her as Prime Minister again. Isn't this essentially...
You've got to understand... We've got to have an election. Mm. We know what we are going to be proposing in those negotiations. We'll see how those negotiations go. This is not the only thing that we're running on. This is how we pay for the things that we are running on. So it's actually sitting down and saying across those six priority areas, how much progress can we make? And how are we going to pay for them? Because of the economic downturn, we do have these long-term challenges. It is simply not credible to go into this particular election campaign without some kind of revenue plan that addresses that, and we are the only party that does.
So that's kind of the short version. What do you guys make of how it's all brought out this week?
It was great body language there. I mean, you could see some really tight, drawn mouths when they were saying, you know, we need to put this on the table and talk about it. The really interesting thing there was this is how we pay for things.
Yeah.
That's what James Shaw said. Because he's got a wish list, right? And they're calling them their six priorities, not bottom lines. And if he doesn't get his, what seems to be, not his words, mine, what seems to be his top priority, being a wealth tax, he's going to have to drop down the list for some of these other things. city's shopping for. And some of them are expensive. You know, they'd like to raise welfare, give everyone a universal income in essence. And he kind of needs this in some form to pay for those policies. Or you're going to be asking, what actually is he going to get out of any arrangement with the government? But Jacinda Ardern, it's circa 2017 in capital gains tax, yeah, isn't it? Where you start to beat them with a stick, and then the leader is forced to actually draw an absolute line on it. And if she were to back down on that, I would argue that she wouldn't get in for a third term.
Well, it's Jacinda Ardern in last weeks of campaigns and taxes. We're back into that territory.
I agree with James Saw, though, in a sense that they do. We need a plan to figure out how to pay for this stuff, and I do agree with him on that line. What I think is really interesting is that you've got a difference here between Jacinda Ardern at least almost engaging in some type of conversation about life after the election, as opposed to what she's sort of saying in regards to New Zealand First, which is, well, the voters will make up the mind of whether or not they come back. So I actually see that she's giving the Greens a bit of a lifeline here, which is to say to some of their voters, we'll have this discussion, but we'll have the discussion after the election. So for me, it sends a signal to some of those Green voters to get out there, put your people at the table.
I think it's really interesting because on one hand, I kind of think that Ardern's position was in kind of very first past the post and quite arrogant to say, you know, you're about to head into negotiations and say, well, I'm not going to negotiate. It's a pretty hard line stance to take. On the other hand, it is very transparent.
But she's not saying,
actually telling us what the government's going to look like.
She's not saying they won't
be
there. No. She's just saying we're not going to negotiate.
No, so I think that's she tell us something.
And she was forced to do. If you go back, and you can easily check this out, to Lisa's interview with Grant Robertson on the day they introduced their top tax rate, and he was asked for about 5 minutes whether the wealth tax for the Greens would be on the table, and he wouldn't rule it out. So to be fair to Collins, Judith Collins, it wasn't a bad attack line from National. To the extent to say that, look, this could be on the agenda in the coalition negotiations. So lobbing that in there was, I think, a fair strategy. Ardern's ruled it out. But you do kind of have the right to do that, I think, as the major party on something as major as economic and tax policy. Now, we know under MMP there is a power of veto. It's not commonly known and not used that often. There's something called a financial veto where if a member's bill was put up in Parliament, for example, saying that, you know, there should be a tax break of X, that the finance minister can exercise a financial veto. Now, this is a little bit different because it would be a cabinet decision on a tax, but the point is roughly the same. You can't expect a majority party, which is, what, 10 times bigger probably than its coalition partner, to adopt something of that nature so that is so contrary to what they've told the public. Now, it's different if I go in asking for, I don't know, synthetic racetracks or green schools or whatever my particular policy thing was, but I never thought that Labor would have a bar of the wealth tax because it's a major, massive economic plank, totally contrary to what they've promised. So it doesn't surprise me. Judith Collins can take it as a win. It's a bit of an own goal because voters now having had it ruled out.
Does it help or hinder? Because in the end, she's got this kind of concession, if you like, but now people know for sure there will be no wealth tax, so she's lost that stick.
Well, funnily enough,
do they? Huh? Do they know for sure?
And she's given the Greens
option. Because she's sowing the doubt. But does that just play to constituents who would support her anyway?
Yeah.
Do people who are still considering their options buy into that? Because in essence, isn't she basically calling Jacinda Ardern a liar?
Well, she is. But funnily enough, the strategy that Judith Collins is offering is, if you want to stop the wealth tax, vote Labour.
That's right.
Really,
That's
isn't right. it? Because it's the major coalition partner saying, ain't going to be a wealth tax, I would resign.
Yeah.
She's got high trust levels, Jacinda Ardern. And you've got the Greens saying they want a wealth tax. Well, the handbrake on the wealth tax is the Labour Party.
Yeah.
And, so that's really what Judith Collins has ended
and
up
And
offering.
You've got the Greens actually getting, you know, a few days now in the election where they've been really strapping for oxygen and getting any attention, have now actually been able to say wealth tax. And then as we saw James Shaw there, you know, listing out, talking about oceans and stuff, and people on the left might go, oh, actually, okay, that's interesting.
And I actually think he comes across to people who are probably that softer National, that they are those, the business people who are looking for another option. I actually think he comes across really well to those people. And he's away from that green school that we've been talking about for a long time now. And he's talking about something different. I actually think, end of the day, Labour, if they go in and they govern by themselves, they'll be a fairly conservative government for the next 3 years. They'll battle through. They won't do a hell of a lot. If the Greens are sitting there, it gives them the opportunity to be transformational, right? Slap another name on it, whether it's the envy tax like Judith Collins keeps on going on about, or whether it's the top tax rate changing. I still think there will be a different tax rate if the Greens are sitting at the table. It might not be the one that we're talking about at the moment.
I don't think there can be. I think that would be absolute political suicide.
Yeah, I agree with
it's like a surcharge on super or something like that, where you've ring-fenced something, you've given your categorical assurance, and then you go out there and whip the carpet from underneath your voters on something so big. I totally agree.
And I think the Greens know it's not going to happen either. No,
of course.
It's still negotiating, right?
So yeah, you can talk about it.
That's right. So I really want that wealth tax. Can I get something else?
Exactly.
It's what else? With you every time, don't you? Can I go to the movie? Well, you can't go to the movie. So you know how I really want to do this. You can have some popcorn at home instead. And it's not a lot different from that. They know that there's not going to be a wealth tax.
Did they ask you to rule in the popcorn or out?
My daughter does, actually. She's going, can you categorically rule it out?
She must have been listening to someone. But I think that's a really interesting point, right? This presumably gives Greens leverage. They go, oh, we really wanted this wealth tax, but you're not going to give us that. So now you're going to give us five other things to make up for
five Green schools.
Exactly. Yeah.
A minimum guaranteed income.
Solar panels on every state house.
I think for the last week of the election, it gives the Greens a bit of a boost, because last week and the week before, a lot of people were talking, and I'll put my hand up, about the Greens not being there.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden we're talking about whether or not they're negotiating a wealth tax.
Are you backing down on your earlier position?
No, I'm still. I think Labour has given them an opportunity. Yeah. I'm not going to categorically rule it in or out this week, but I think they've given them an opportunity.
Just on that note, before we move on, I've brought in four envelopes with a piece of paper. Put your percentages on it, seal it and sign it over the back so that we can see it hasn't been opened, and when we get together post-election, we can open them.
Ooh.
Anyway.
Okay. Can I fill this out on Saturday night?
No.
Sunday morning?
No. Can I fill it out today and seal it?
Can I apply to the High Court to have mine suppressed?
We'll burn them all if they're too embarrassing.
The interesting thing for me is the pressure. You mentioned the handbrake argument and Labour having to be its own handbrake. This whole discussion raises for me the expectations that you were talking about, Scotty, on this. If it is Labour and Greens, then you've got the handbrake argument's gone because there's no more New Zealand First, right? The pressure in this next term, you say can be quite conservative. But they, you know, there are words on the table about ending poverty, about transformational change, about climate change and nuclear moments. I still don't see how the rhetoric, how the policy agenda that Labour's pushing for matches that rhetoric. And that's going to be a problem in the next term.
I think the next term, if it's Labour by themselves, it's still a hangover from COVID.
Can they do that for 3 years?
Well, why not? Because then they can be transformational in the next one. It was the John Key approach, which is kicking the can down the road, and then maybe give it a crack in the third one.
Interesting.
One thing I did find interesting about those clips was that Judith Collins didn't have any MPs behind her, not that I knew of any of them, but you had James Shaw, Marama Davison, and then you had the Prime Minister with a few MPs around here.
I've noticed you've seen, with the national ones, I've seen a lot of Nicola Willis, Chris Bishop and Paul Goldsmith. Beyond that, a lot of national MPs and some of the ones I've spoken to are staying in their electorates and keeping their heads down.
Yeah, the caucus seems to be, well, some of it seems to be abandoning her. I don't know if you wanted to talk now about the obesity comments from Judith Collins.
Let's go there.
Have you got a clip there?
We have got a clip. Let's roll the first one. This is Judith Collins talking about, she had mentioned the obesity first on a radio show, and then the media pack travelling with her asked her about that.
Do you think it's an epidemic?
No, it's not catching.
And some have called your comments heartless, your response?
Yes. Do you know what is heartless? Is actually thinking that someone else can cure these issues. We can all take personal responsibility and we all have to own up to our little weaknesses on these matters. Do you think
obesity is a weakness?
Yes, generally. It's one that many of us do. We actually entirely have to take personal responsibility. Do not blame systems for personal choices.
Great follow-up question there. If someone hearing her say that your word weakness and picking up on that, what do you make of it?
I thought it was an extraordinarily disappointing thing to say.
Yeah.
And that's at my most charitable. I just think that anyone who's even put themselves in the shoes of someone who can't afford to buy good food would find that devastating, actually. You know, the pressures that are on families to feed their kids and to work hard, and the marketing pressure and the price points of junk food just have been feeding this obesity epidemic, which is one of the biggest health crises we face in New Zealand. You've got 250,000 people with type 2 diabetes in this country. And to say that it's just a weakness, I think, is devastating. From a public health perspective, I think it was mean-spirited. And I think it was politically bloody stupid, frankly, because there are a lot of centre-right voters who would be struggling with these issues themselves. And for her to say that and call it a weakness, I'm struggling to find an example of a leader in recent times who has said something that, in my view, is so misguided.
Yeah. So, and well, it's interesting to hear those arguments, because an unlikely person made comments similar to that on the campaign trail in response.
No, it's not a weakness. When you are doing two or three jobs and you've got no time to cook and you're flat out, then, you know, take away food and cheap food at that, and given the income structure of so many people, that's the opportunity of first resort when it comes to food. It's understandable. And rather than condemning, I'd like to see we change our lifestyle and change the way we address this matter.
Well, again, Winston and I are in complete agreement.
That is exactly what my takeaway was from that. But it was a total misstep from Judith Collins, and totally diverted the focus of the campaign in the final days.
Why does it matter so much? Because it's not policy, it's just a flippant comment, isn't it?
It matters because it shows your personal character.
Yeah.
And people will assess her on that level. It's kind of, well, it's a mean-spirited comment. Does that make you a mean person?
Let's be serious about this. Yeah. People are getting their limbs cut off in hospital today at huge rates. With this epidemic, it's one of the most serious crises facing the New Zealand health system. And if your belief is, oh well, look, anyone can just be slim, you just need to have
discipline, good choices. Yep.
I get where she was going with the personal responsibility centre-right thing, and I don't have a problem with that in many areas. But it's just a massive oversimplification of a complex issue.
And why pick that as an issue? Because it's a personal. Yes, it's personal. She's going on about personal responsibility, but it's a personal attack. And you've got people who are walking into the voting booth, and what, something like 8% of people are undecided before they walk into the booth and they tick on the day, right? Imagine those people were walking in thinking, she just talked about me. So now,
meanly, she talked about you meanly. Mm. And also, she has been making a pitch for the Pacifica vote, and Pacifica peoples are overrepresented in these statistics. So on the one hand, you're saying, come to mama. Mm. And on the other hand, you are saying,
come to Jesus.
You're saying simply mean things about it.
Yeah.
And another extraordinary moment for me was turning on the radio news the other day and hearing Jerry Brownlee having to take one for the team on the back of this discussion, obviously. He was asked a very direct question on radio as to, well, who's responsible in essence for you being fat, Jerry? Mm. What can you do? You know, he was a good foot soldier for his leader, fell right into line and said, I'm responsible for it. But to be put in that situation, wow, it's just kind of cruel, isn't
it? And that last 10% or so of people who are still making up their mind, to be honest, they don't understand the wealth tax. They're not actually really making a decision based on that. They're making a decision on COVID, right? They're making a decision on who's going to keep my job safe and whether me or Nana are going to get sick. And now they might be making a decision about whether someone thinks I'm fat or not.
Yeah. And the two things are massively linked as well, because obesity is a massive problem for COVID death. It puts you at far greater risk of COVID death.
So does diabetes.
Yes, it does. So these things are all linked. And so I think it's a lot more serious than just some flippant comment about personal responsibility. But it was interesting to me, you mentioned Jerry Brownlee there, that Mark Mitchell was on radio.
Yes.
And he was asked about these comments, and he said, look, it's a lot more complex than that. he said something close to what me and Winston said,
yes.
Which is that it's a lot more complex than this, and it looks at the price of food, and it looks at a whole lot of other issues. So her own MPs aren't even with her on that.
So let's talk about that, because, you know, shot across the bow, potential leadership, you know, Mark Mitchell's position himself, he's run before, he'll run again. Do we think that you know, we're talking about a scenario in which National does not win at the weekend. How safe is Judith Collins? Does she last a week, a year? What?
I think she's in real trouble, actually. I think, you know, a significant loss on the night, certainly anything under 30, but even in the early 30s. She might hang on while someone, the knives are sharpened, or someone, or Chris Luxon finds out where the Bill's office and the toilets and Bellamy's are in Parliament and gets his act together, maybe. But I don't see her having fought this campaign in the way she has, which isn't, she hasn't been all bad in my view. I thought she, and we can talk about that a bit later when we look at highs and lows. I think she had a good first half of the campaign, maybe. I think the way that she's fought it now, and the feeling you get, and when you see these MPs distancing themselves from her, I don't think she's in for the long haul as a leader.
You'd hold her there at max till summer break, right? And then just let people go, have their barbecues, get their caucus numbers together. After the election,
old Stardust
will still be around. Let's say it's the Labour win on Saturday night. It's the Prime Minister will carry on. There'll be a bit of Stardust there. And then if we have your friend, Mr Peters, who's not there, then there'll be huge coverage around what that means for the end of that political career.
Yeah, I think if it was a 36, 37, 38, 39, save the furniture, and had done well, she would have earned another year or so. But
which a couple of weeks ago seemed
I was entertaining that possibility a few weeks back.
I think that a couple of things, because there's so many early votes, in this particular election race, that some people who might have been put off by her actions this week have already committed. So that's a plus for her. On the subject of whether she will last if she's sub 35%, bearing in mind that's her own benchmark for failure.
Yep.
And she in her own book has said that National MPs do not tolerate losers.
But how dog-eared is that, your version of that book?
Yeah, but I just think, you know what I think about, is that they're running out of cannon fodder. So, you know, they're running out of people to push to the front lines.
As we're walking down the stairs and I spilt my water, I said to Guyon, you know, who else then?
Christopher Luxon is what Guyon has raised.
Maybe.
But hang on, just remember, John Key was, he'd done a term, he was in his second term before they rolled him to the front of the pack, right? So they probably thinking that Christopher Luxon, if he is the heir in waiting, needs to get a few miles on the clock. So
Dawn Brash had only had a year.
Yeah, and look what happened to him.
He came within a percentage
point.
So do you? So I take your point about Luxon, but Brash came in 2002 and was leader by the end of 2003.
But Bill English, in that same circumstance that you're talking about there, Bill English held on for what, 9-10 months after the most catastrophic loss in National's history. So they might not be so quick to get out the broom, because then they've got to waste someone else before they get to the actual person who will be the leader, potentially. And I think, obviously, Bill English had a lot of respect from his colleagues and a lot of mana. Does she have the same?
Yeah, it was different, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was different.
It feels, I mean, and I can understand why they chose her, and you can understand, you know, when she's on her game, she's good, because she is polarising. She's volatile. She's one of those game-changer politicians, isn't she? When she walks in, she's on stage, you think, oh, what's going to happen now? And when it goes well for her, that's impressive. In a way that Bill English is more moderate, wasn't he? He's not as volatile. Yeah. So I just think that when the dust is all settled on this, there's going to be a lot of grumpiness. There's a lot of bruises, eh?
There'll be a lot of bruises, but there will also, theoretically, I think she's given them at least a chance to get back into the 30s and have a shot. And there should be some of those MPs in the National Party, when they get back to Parliament, who turn around and actually say thank you.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
They were steering.
No,
they won't, but they should do, because they were steering down the barrel of
with
going
Todd
into Bill.
If she stays anywhere in the threes, I agree. I think there's a certain amount of thank you.
I agree with that, but I just don't think that they will thank her.
No. You talked about Winston getting back in or not. How are we to see Winston and New Zealand First in this campaign? I got to say, they really haven't. Winston has not looked like Winston. I don't think he's played a good hand at all. And he went negative against his own government.
Yep, that's. I think that he had the option. He could have hugged the people he was with,
which is what the Greens did.
Which they is were what like the strategy the Greens
stay in the glow,
did.
Stay in the lamplight of Ardern.
Jacinda plus one, as you like to say, and James Shaw also likes to say, Jacinda plus one. And he went negative really quickly. He's tried to kind of pull back from that, I reckon, in the last sort of 7 to 10 days.
Too little, too late.
But why didn't he sort of concentrate on what was it, 190 pieces of legislation on their watch, COVID without the massive death toll that potentially had been forecast? Why didn't he concentrate on those kinds of things? And
he chose her. He could have said,
I gave her.
You Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah.
Stick with me.
So, and then the other thing about the way this is playing out, and we had a brief discussion about it the other day, and I went away and looked it up. 2008.
That doesn't sound like you, Lisa.
Yeah, not at all. 2008, when he utterly hit the skids, obviously.
All right.
You were raising the question. You were saying, I can't remember whether National, before the election, categorically ruled him out as a partner.
Yeah, John Key
and John Key
did.
Came yeah. out yes, and absolutely that, yeah. ruled him out. And that was after Helen Clark had relieved him, I think is the term we'll use. A guy on relieved
yes.
him of his portfolios while there was another donation investigation going on. Mm-hmm. At that point, John Key comes out, categorically rules him out. So we've got some similarities rolling
absolutely.
Into this election.
I mean, you know, he's been strategically incredible over the years, and I think you'd struggle to find a politician in the world, in the democratic world, who has the raw political skill that Winston Peters has showed to be part of, what is it, 4 different governments.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. And still positioning himself as the outsider.
And genuine power to the, you know, on the right hand of, as you say, a whole list of prime ministers.
But what he's not been able to do, and I've described it as a sort of Houdini manoeuvre, is to get himself from being within a government to then campaigning to actually get back into Parliament. And it's a very, very difficult equation because he's been part of a government. He's an oppositional figure. He's an outsider.
Yeah.
He's a maverick. He wants, you know, look at him. If he does something wrong, he'll sue you for it, even though he did something wrong. I mean, that's the way he
can't
goes.
Help himself. His
instinct is to fight. And it's served him extraordinarily well in almost every facet of his political career, except that manoeuvre of being in a government and then being oppositional during a campaign. It's like the life cycle of a butterfly. He somehow has to get from being the caterpillar to the butterfly back to being the caterpillar, or whatever the analogy is.
It's
an almost impossible manoeuvre, and he chose to go oppositional again.
Yeah.
And
because I guess they probably said, I can imagine the strategy meeting saying, well, we've got to let Winston be Winston. And it's what you're saying. That's Winston.
Yeah, but
he's
didn't learn any new tricks. I know you're going to get to the highs and lows and the biggest disappointments and all the rest of it. But he didn't adapt. You heard the same old phrases and the same techniques and strategies from 40 years ago.
And in an election.
Lee Kuan Yew and the Maori Battalion, baby.
Yes.
Election that had taken away a lot of that ground from him.
Yes, because the borders are closed. Yeah.
All of those things. Interesting. I heard him, I think this morning on radio, when he actually was asked about what he does afterwards and will he regret.
Oh.
And he opened up and he said, I have no regrets. This is the very first time I've ever heard him go away from, I'll be there after the weekend. So I just think the oppositional thing was the wrong strategy. He should have jumped on the back of the Stardust and rode along.
He can't, though.
What?
He pathologically can't do it.
I just don't think
he personally can do it. And of course, this is just my opinion. I mean, I don't walk in his shoes.
You say the same lines, though. Okay?
Yeah. There is some commonality.
Same person.
I just don't think that he actually could bring himself to do that.
Which is the wrong strategy.
He's an oppositional guy. Mm. He always has been.
And it's where he can look back and go, "Yep," and it's worked, and this is why it's worked. But yeah, it's COVID, and it's Jacinda Ardern, and it's a popularity thing, and it's a different
contest. Thinking back strategically, and I have thought a little bit about this, is he could have done like a 2.5-year coalition agreement, or even a 2-year one.
Yeah.
You know, you need a parachute, and
sacked guy on.
Yeah, that's right. No, it actually is, and you saw.
Well,
you
I say
saw,
that was serious.
No, that's right, and you engineer a crisis, or it was Wellington Airport in August of 1998. So you
without COVID, he you may well have found one, right? I mean, I genuinely believe that without COVID, without the pandemic, he may well have been looking for that crisis, but he couldn't in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, that's true. But you could actually even write it in hindsight, couldn't you? And you could say, we are going to do a coalition agreement that lasts for X amount of time. We guarantee confidence and supply beyond that, so there's no constitutional instability. Yep. But we exit as ministers on a given date, and that allows you then to...
It looks pretty cynical, though, doesn't it? Manipulative?
Well, you could draw a programme. You could. What's wrong with being cynical and manipulative in an election campaign?
You are sounding like Winston, mate.
Don't play the Philadelphia lawyer with me.
How many times have I heard that?
I've got a strategy in my boot I need to go and get. Poll tonight, debate tonight, do we care? I mean, the poll, I got... If the Greens are close, then it could actually, it could matter for the Greens.
Yeah, I care about the poll because of what's been going on in the last week. I'm really curious to see if it's moved the dial in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
I think given the vast number of advance votes, that there's been a mistake made in the timing of this. At the very latest, I would have thought you'd go with the last leaders debate on the Tuesday or the Thursday of the week.
I mean, the thing to watch too in the polls, I mean, you know, you might see New Zealand first at 3.5-4 and go, oh my God, they're close to making it. But if the polls have been right and they've only got 2.5% of 1.4 million votes, right? Now, I'm not going to try and do the maths in my head now, but you might need something like 7.5% of that remaining.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the other thing.
It's hard to move the dial that much.
I'll be interested in seeing the Greens number tonight, obviously.
Yeah.
And because I think of anybody, it'll be their people who might get out of bed on Saturday now and actually go. And, you know, 6 weeks ago I was saying that they were the people who won't get out of bed because Labor were going to govern alone. Whereas now I actually think that it's probably many people would accept that Labor's not going to get there by themselves. And now I actually think that gives the... Well, I don't think that.
Well, he'll write it in an envelope and find out.
I don't think so, but I'm probably less sure about that than I was through the whole campaign this week. I'm starting to doubt myself.
I'm looking back to history and thinking...
Because of the wasted vote. Because there's going to be a chunk of wasted vote.
Is Jacinda Ardern as popular as a 2014 John Key? And I think you'd have to say yes. Yeah. Now, he got 47% twice. So he got 47% in 2014. Is she good for that? I reckon she probably is.
But there is a bigger wasted vote this time, which would make it easier for her.
Yes. I mean, 47. I mean, she might get 60. They might get 60 seats. It'd be around the cusp. And then you've got to watch for the special votes. You know, it was 450,000 special votes last time, so they really do roll in.
I think
it
could change. If the Greens are close to 5 tonight, then I could imagine, I've said this before,
you
multiple
mean on
times,
poll.
On the poll, then I still reckon you could get a lot of centre-left voters going, OK, I'll go and vote Green, and Labour's vote might come down. It's a bit like the... That 2% that David Farrow talked about in the campaign, you know, that you could actually see a 1 or 2% move, I reckon, the last week as people start to think strategically.
And when Guyon talks about the special votes, you've also got a lot of people who have come home, so they won't be part of the special votes anymore, who may have been overseas. But there'll also be all those people who are offshore and are more engaged in what is happening in New Zealand, because potentially they might see themselves heading back here.
And will have been reading things like the New York Times and the Guardian have been all over Jacinda Ardern, great New Zealand has handled the COVID crisis compared to the rest of the world, so that probably is
going to... I also know the Māori vote, that there has been a lot of strategic vote with vote candidate, and then a lot of people are actually sending their vote to the Greens. So
that's true.
Which is different from...
Party voting Green
party
and Māori, Māori candidate.
Māori candidate.
Interesting. And they've asked only for candidate votes.
Okay, give me one seat each that you think you'll be most closely watching on the night. One seat you're interested in.
Well, Wairiki for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wairiki, because it could be a trigger seat and it could have the Māori Party back in Parliament. I think that would be, I mean, Auckland Central's interesting, but I don't think it's going to play the role that one of the Māori seats would be. I mean, it's possible the Māori Party could win that. Possible they could
and
even win.
People in Labour, I think, are a little bit anxious now this week. They are a little bit anxious now about Tamaki. There's certainly been some conversation, phone calls made this week and a little bit worry about whether Penny is completely safe.
Yeah, I think John Tamahere has made a real big push. So Wairiki, yes, I'd watch that. I'm watching Auckland just out of interest because that race has gone hot, cold and hot again. Tamaki Makaurau, and I will be interested in some of those seats that are marginal that Nationals holding, like Hutt South and Northcote, just to see what direction they're headed.
I think more than those ones, the Wairarapa, East Coast and Whanganui are all, and that's interesting for me because Labor has become this urban party in the past couple of elections, and if Labor can get back out in some of those regional seats, it'll be interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because you know that clock that you made noise at the beginning, the tickety-tocky?
Okay. Favourite policy, everybody?
Oh, favourite policy?
Do you have one?
Well...
Or least favourite policy or anything? It was on the list, come on.
Was it? I didn't read that.
Public holiday, Matariki, do you remember that? It seems like 2 years
ago. That's miles ago.
Yeah, I like Matariki. The other one, and I don't know the details, I can't remember the details, but it was that infrastructure bank.
Yeah, the I always like an infrastructure bank.
And I like the Nationals tech policy, bringing in the graduates, the grade school students and trying to get
National,
those.
In the early days of the campaign, had some quite sound policy on some stuff.
Yeah. Best line?
Best line for me, and I talk amongst yourselves while I get it right, was John Tamaheri, right, at the News Hub debate. What would they call them? They called them the power brokers, right?
Debate, yep.
And John Tamaheri came out and said, referring to David Seymour, he says, he's a recipient of the house burning down. That's the National House, right? Judith Collins' job is to save the furniture. What she doesn't understand is that David is out the back taking a lot of it out.
That's a really good point. I think National strategy on the minor parties has been terrible.
Mine's David Seymour's line around the babies and the toddlers.
That was mine too. I love the toddlers. A lot of worried toddlers are coming to my speeches.
Mine's actually David Seymour too, but I think he hit the personal responsibility note a lot better than Judith Collins. He said something like, after Labor's paid for your kids' lunch and Nationals brushed their teeth, what's left for parents to do? In reference to lunch in schools and Nationals policy, I can't even remember, was it a free toothbrush?
Yeah, free toothbrush.
You got a free toothbrush.
And that was a nice line. It shows you the skill and dexterity he had compared to Judith Collins. I mean, you know, pushing the personal responsibility thing, but doing it with a bit of wit.
Highlights and lowlights and winners and losers. Anybody or anything?
My low light would be Winston Peters trying to suppress even the statement, and the New Zealand First Party trying to suppress even the statement that the SFO had charged two people with obtaining by deception, and the ongoing efforts to suppress the names and keep from the public the connection, if any,
one more round in court
between
those
defendants and the party. This may go to the Supreme Court, to the Court of Appeal, but we're running out of runway.
Yeah.
I think my low light is just the fact the campaign went for so long in the end, this election period was so long, and nobody's fault, obviously, but my highlight would have been probably the News Hub debate in the middle, because I think that gave us at least an opportunity to have a challenge of ideas. It gave a little bit of momentum to the campaign. I actually thought that was probably my highlight.
Yeah, cool.
Campaign.
Yeah, I'm more thinking of the low lights.
Yeah, go for it.
There wasn't enough discussion about policies that really, really matter, like housing, about poverty and the future of the country. It's a presidential race that we're faced with here.
Yep.
And when you talked about nobody in the back row when Judith Collins was up talking, we actually, who else have we heard from? Like, you heard Grant Robertson at various points was played the role of the hatchet guy, because obviously it doesn't fit with the brand of kindness for you to be bagging on the others.
So, and Goldsmith had a go on the other side.
But... Yeah, Goldsmith had a go on the other side, but you really didn't see anyone else.
No.
You occasionally saw Chris Hipkins, and Goldsmith.
Very occasionally.
That's it. Where's Jerry Brownlee, who's the campaign manager? You didn't hear from anyone else, so it was largely a presidential campaign.
Saw Shane Retty, and he's probably the rising star of the campaign. He's the one who's probably had the best
rolled
campaign.
Rolled out to certain advantage.
Indeed. But he took his moment, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. Key moment for me was probably back in the middle of March, frankly, when we went into lockdown for the first time. I think that's kind of defined it from there, really, hasn't it?
I've remembered my highlight.
I'll go for
it. I know
what
my highlight will be. Midnight Friday, when we're not allowed to talk about this anymore.
There you go. Well, you're not allowed to talk about it anymore now for today, because we've got to go. Ka kite anō. Listeners, thank you very much for listening. We do have another episode of Caucus next week, next Thursday after the election. We'll talk about coalitions, how negotiations are going at that point. you can listen to us on Google, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, of course, on the RNZ website. You can watch us on YouTube. Thousands, again, biggest viewing of all last week. So thanks for those people who are watching us. We will fill out our forms and give them to Lisa.
No, give them to you. You're the man in charge.
Oh God, okay. I'm not sure if I can handle the responsibility.
I've signed the back of mine, so like a seal. anything not mentioned in here is wasted vote, just so you know. I've only put the parties that I think are going to make it with their numbers.
Join us on Saturday night live on RNZ, where some of these guys will be hosting the whole blooming thing and telling you the results as they come in. We'll enjoy your company then. Thanks, everybody.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.